This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. A lot to talk about in a short week. It feels like we need to do some cleaning up before we get to Pesach and before we finally sit down this evening to our Seder. But I'd like to start, if I may, with the story of Dor Zimmel. Dor Zimmel was a major in the reserves, and he was seriously injured in the attack last week on Aramshe, one of those soldiers who was seriously injured and unfortunately yesterday passed away as a result of the wounds that he sustained. And Dor Zimmel was 27 years old. He was a reserve soldier from Evin Yehuda, which is a town slightly east of Netanya in the central part of Israel. And he served in the Etzioni Brigade, which is a special reserve unit. And he'd been in Etzioni since October when he was called up. And a couple of weeks after the initial call up that he received and reporting for duty, he got a day off. And he decided to use his day off in order to propose to his girlfriend, mm-hmm. Shir. And a special proposal ceremony was set up by his army colleagues, and there are pictures showing him still in his uniform with his weapon proposing to Shir. And the irony of the connection of the proposal was that the ring that he used to propose to Shir was donated to him by a fellow citizen of Evin Yehuda by the name of Alon Masika. Alon Masika is a jeweler in Evin Yehuda, and Alon's son Adir was at the Nova Music Festival on October the 7th and unfortunately was killed. And Alon decided to take upon himself to donate rings to IDF soldiers who wished to propose to their girlfriends to make them wives in order to honor Adir's memory and in order to help build homes in Israel. And it was the case that Dor used a ring that Alon gave to him in order to propose to his girlfriend, Shir. And actually, they went to Alon's home in order to raise a toast to the new couple in Evin Yehuda. They were not known to each other in Evin Yehuda until this moment. But when the ring was donated, they gathered at Alon's home. And that was the ring that was used to propose to Shir. The wedding had been planned for a month from now. But unfortunately, instead of a wedding, there will be a funeral. And we salute Dor Zimmel, not only a resident of Evin Yehuda, not only a major in reserve, but also a student at Reichman University. And of course, our heart goes to Shir and to Dor's family, who are left to go to their Seder table tonight, unfortunately, with an empty seat at their table.
Yeah, just no words, and we've just been talking about how difficult this Pesach is, how profound and how meaningful, and there's just so much to try and deal with, and especially tomorrow, which is the first day of Pesach, will be day 200 days since this horror began.
That's true. I mean, I wanted to end with some words about Pesach, but maybe we'll talk about them now with your permission, Howard. Sure. I'd like to say, you know, when we sit down at Pesach, Pesach is really about Zman Cheruteinu. It's called the time of our freedom. And we talk about the freedom from the horrors that we experienced as a people in Egypt. And we talk about the Exodus of Egypt. And the Seder is really all about exercising our freedom. We lean and we do things in order to express our freedom. And tonight will be a very, very difficult expression of freedom, knowing full well that 133 of our brothers and sisters are not free. They are being held in Gaza against their will. And I hope that we can all have a space left at our table. I know how you've already said you will have a space at your table. And I hope we can all do the same, each other space. It sort of harks back to the days of when Soviet Jews were not free to celebrate Pesach. And we had a place at our table in order to give them presence at our table. And I think we should do the same for our hostages. Let's also think about those of our brothers and sisters who are not free, those at Columbia University who are expressing, who are experiencing this massive anti-Semitism and who've been told to stay away from the university in New York City, or the Jews in London who are told they are openly Jewish and therefore antagonizing other people because they happen to walk around with a kippah on their head on Shabbat. That apparently is too openly Jewish. So the expression of our freedom is somewhat diluted because of the fact that there are so many of us who really aren't free. And then we have the other aspect. We have those of our IDF soldiers and members of our security forces who are very free and who are not going to be home tonight to celebrate Seder with their families. Let's remember them. I know a lot of effort will be made to allow them to at least experience as much of the Seder as they can. I know the army goes to major efforts in order to try to involve as many of the soldiers on duty as they can at a Pesach Seder. Let's remember them because they are giving us the opportunity to be free. And let's finally think about the freedom that we really do have, because in days gone by, before the State of Israel, our situation would have been very, very dramatic. And we can compare it to parts of history where Jews were under significant attack around the world, and we didn't have the State of Israel. But today we do, and we are so grateful to our brave soldiers and to the members of our security forces who have ensured that tonight we, as Jews in Israel and around the world, will be able to sit down peacefully at our Seder table, remembering those who are not free, but we ourselves are able to express our freedom. And let's just when one of the precepts of the Seder night is v'higadata lebincha, to tell your sons, we talk about telling the story of the Exodus from Egypt, but I think tonight there is more of a story to tell, and I think that we should be allowed a little bit of leeway to tell the story of the last 6 months alongside the story of the Exodus from Egypt. Each of you will know what you want to tell your children about what we've been through over the last 6 months. But let's not forget that that's really part of the story, and to tell this to our children.
And I just wonder if there isn't an element of freedom in that the masks are off, and that we have the freedom to see and to know exactly what is going on in the world and what everything is about. There's no more pretense. And maybe there is a freedom of freedom from our own illusion or delusion, because it's very clear to see what is what in the world. That's just a thought. Let's talk about what the more information that has emerged following the Israeli attack on Iran on Friday.
So a fascinating day it was on Friday when we woke up to the news that there'd been this attack in Iran. A lot of reaction immediately, knee-jerk reaction, saying, oh, it wasn't enough. It was a little too little too late. This was really an insult to the 300 missiles that had been fired a week before, and that we should really take this more seriously. I had quite an interesting conversation with an Air Force pilot over the last few days who really wasn't free to tell me very much, except to say that he'd managed to gain a few more virtual stamps in his passport over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. I would love to read his book when it eventually becomes available. But one of the most interesting articles that I've read comes from the New York Times, somewhat ironically, about the attack that took place against the military base, which is alongside the Natanz nuclear plant in the Isfahan province of Iran. And the information that's come out of this New York Times article says a few things. First of all, the target of the attack seems to have been the Russian S-300 anti-missile system, which is located at that military base. And it was a fairly clinical strike that managed to disable the S-300 anti-missile system and, ironically, not activate any of the anti-missile systems in the process. So in other words, this was a strike by an Israeli aircraft, which was completely under the radar, was not detected at all, and it took out the radar system and the anti-missile system that was there in order to exactly protect the situation, to protect Natanz nuclear site from a strike of the sort that was that took place. We understand that this missile was fired from an Israeli aircraft, which was not within Iranian airspace. We are told that it also wasn't in Jordanian airspace in order to try and avoid some lack of comfort with Jordan. Jordan didn't really want to be part of that. And so the question was, where exactly was this aeroplane when it fired the missile that took the S-300 anti-missile system out? Nobody can really answer that question. Speculation about Azerbaijan, perhaps. Maybe it might have been over the sea somewhere. Not really sure. But one thing seems quite certain is that in addition to the drones that we are told were launched from Iranian territory, which is quite an interesting development as well, there was this missile that took the S-300 out. Why simply take the S-300 anti-missile system out? What's the point of that? Why didn't we simply go straight in and attack the military, the nuclear reactor? Well, I think that this was just what we would call in the business a knock on the roof. This was just a little warning that all bets are off. Anti-missile system in Iran really has no consequence and significance whatsoever, because the Israeli planes are able to fly under the radar. They're able to launch missiles under the radar, that all bets are off in Iran, and that if the Iranians want to continue this open warfare of the sort that they tried to start 10 days ago, then they should be ready for whatever comes next. So this was, I think, just a little warning, and I think quite a smart little undertaking, which on the one hand satisfies Israel's Western allies not to open a new front with Iran completely, because anything more than that might have solicited some sort of a retaliation. It allowed the Islamic Republic to make statements such as, oh, it was nothing. It was like just a little bit of dust on my collar and nobody really worries about it. Nothing was damaged and nothing was harmed. But I think the message was very, very clear indeed, that Israel has the opportunity and the ability to rule the skies and to rule whatever is needed in Iran. And if something more happens, that Israel will certainly escalate the situation. So I'm sure listeners have their views, but I think that many of us are now saying this seems to have been a relatively smart move, which prevents the situation from escalating, which sends a very, very clear message to the Islamic Republic of Iran that they should be very, very cautious about what they do next, that Israel has the ability to do it. And it was demonstrated extremely clinically and extremely accurately in the process. So that is what we know at the moment about what happened with Iran. We don't know too much about what was behind the scenes and whether potentially there might be more still planned in this particular retaliation attack. But at least for now, it seems like the message has been made and the message has been sent. And I think that for those, even though they're not willing to publicly admit it, I think the message has been well received by those who need to understand.
Yeah. And just to add to that, when you say this is what we know and we don't know everything, that to me is the biggest win of this all. Because until now, I felt for the last 6 or 7 months, there's been so much discussion and we seem to know so much of what Israel is doing and debating and thinking and strategizing. And here's an event that we don't fully get. We don't know what's really at play. We don't know all of the nuances around it. And to me, that provides me greater comfort than knowing, because there is the sense, this is what I expect from Israel and from Israeli intelligence and strategy, that we don't really know and that we're guessing. And that there's something at play that that will play out at some point when we realize it. So to me, that is very, very much a comfort. Anthony Reich,
Of course, bearing in mind that what we don't know, our enemies don't know. And that's really the point. It's not that they want to keep the information from us, but more importantly, that our enemies should also not know.
Carol Z says, good morning all. I'm overwhelmed by the unfolding of stories happening this Pesach. Certainly this Pesach is the most significant of my life. I'm absorbing every word. Thank you, Chai FM. That's from Carol Z. And I think it is. Certainly it feels one of the most profound Pesachs that I can ever recall. Anthony Reich, wishing you and your family a Chag Kasher V'Sameach. And we'll chat to you on Thursday. It is 8 a.m.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohen from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail, and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.